So welcome, everyone. You are in the right spot. Welcome to a live Tech Talk Clubhouse style. Do me a big favor and follow Dan and George. They are donating their valuable time generously, so give them a follow and follow VoiceOver Pros, upper left-hand corner. Guys, Dan and George are the hosts of VoiceOver Body Shop and Tech Talk, which premieres each Monday night at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can catch it at vobs.tv and also directly from their YouTube show. The podcast has over 175,000 downloads. Think of that in context of a VO show. That's incredible.
That's actually just a podcast.
Right, that's just a podcast. Right. Actually, 2021 is the 10-year anniversary of the show, so we'll chat about that a little bit. And the big thing is, guys, Dan and George have been warning us about the impending doom of needing a professional quality home studio for, about a decade. And in 2020, we finally started to believe them. Imagine that. So put your hands together and help me welcome the guys, Dan Leonard and George the Tech Whittem. How you doing, guys?
Great.
Oh, awesome. This is fun.
Thanks for having us this morning.
Absolutely. Dan. Again, thank you for your time. And so everyone in the audience, we already have six hands raised. Go ahead and raise them now. Think of a question later because we're going to toss it to you guys real briefly. And we want to make sure we get in as many of your tech questions as possible, primarily home studios, but anything having to do with recording voiceover in general. So guys, real quick, because when folks go to your YouTube page to subscribe, they may see EWAB show. So can you explain what was EWAB show and what was the evolution of EWABs into VoiceOver Body Shop?
Fascinating that you would mention that, because George actually emailed me a letter last night, or an email.
Exchange that I found. I was searching for some unrelated thing, some other technology. And it just came, that email popped out of the blue, like on command. And it was the email where Dan and I initially seeded or hatched this idea.
This plot.
Yeah. What was that email dated? What year?
January 2011.
Yep, that's right. And we were having one of our usual email exchanges where I sent an email to Dan. I said, Dan, this audio sounds whack, weird. What the heck do you think's going on here? What's going on with this weird audio? Dan writes back. He's like, this processing is wrong, and why are they processing, and da-da-da-da, and back and forth. And then he writes in parentheses, this is starting to sound like a Car Talk episode. And that's when I was like, OMG. This is a Car Talk. This is Car Talk. And then I wrote back, and I was like, you're absolutely right. We have to do this. We have to do some kind of a Car Talk like thing where we talk tech and just with humor and take questions. So we just figured out a way to do it, and we did it. And it was pretty rough to start, but we did it.
So is Car Talk just an arbitrary term, or was there an actual show titled Car Talk?
Oh, I guess we're dating ourselves.
Oh, God. Oh, no, there was these two brothers in Boston, Tom and Ray Maliazzi, who had a program on NPR for many, many years called Car Talk. And they were just really funny guys. People would call in saying, you know, my car's making a noise. What does that mean? And the two of them would just riff on it. And George and I both love that program. And, being auto type guys.
Techie people. Yeah.
And we liked their approach. So when we started doing the show, it was like, well, what can we call it? And I'm like, well, I'm in the East because I was in Buffalo at the time and George was in Santa Monica. I said, well, let me just call it East-West Audio Body Shop.
That's why it has the body shop in the name, for people probably wondering, why the heck is Body Shop in the name of this show? What does that have to do with the show? It's an homage to that NPR show from way back.
Exactly. And then when I came out west, we decided to call it VoiceOver Body Shop. And then, who was it? Our comedian friend, Chris, what's his name?
Chris Heward. Yeah. Chris Heward. I think we were putting out a call for names, or maybe he just volunteered it, but he just sent me an email in the middle of the night, like, Eureka, VOBS. I was like, yes, that is absolutely right.
So if folks are searching on YouTube, can they search for VoiceOver Body Shop, or does it have to be EWABs?
On YouTube, it's VoiceOver Body Shop.
Yeah. If you type in EWABs, you will find content, and it will be all of our old pre-VOBS content. So if you like watching old, if you want to see our history of our show, just type EWABs, and you'll see all the old stuff.
Yeah, but we did have great fun doing it. And it's actually been more fun since we've been out here. Once we could get a lot of people in the our actual studio here in Sherman Oaks. But of course, that has been kind of not being able, we've not been able to do that for a year now. And it's opened up some opportunities for, you know, for different types of guests. Although I miss having George and our director Sue actually in the studio with us, and of course a studio audience that will actually laugh at us when we say something funny. So,
which yeah, is exactly, we love to have an audience, and sometimes we have to can it.
Well played. That's a lot like Clubhouse when you're the only one on stage and you crack a joke and you're like, oh wait, they may be laughing, but they may be not laughing.
Yeah, you, it might actually just be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's quick with the draw, guys. He's quick with the draw.
We've been doing this a while.
So, guys, the average podcast lasts, what, like 4 to 6 episodes? You've been doing it for 10 years. So what's the secret behind 10 years of success?
Yeah, no pod fading here.
Yeah. The secret to success is clearly there's an audience that wants the information that we offer and that we certainly let people know that it's there. We have, you know, probably about 400 people subscribed to the podcast, but we've been far more successful once we went on Facebook Live and then put it as a replay and then promote the heck out of it. Because if you're a member of any voiceover group on Facebook, you probably get a notice that our, you know, that the show is available in replay, and we're getting very easily, you know, 2,000 views a week on every show. So that's I think one of the reasons for his success. You know, it's keeping it in front of people's mind, and you know, but then again, the purpose of the show is to shamelessly promote what George and I do, which I think some people may have a problem with on Clubhouse because you've got all these people offering their expertise when it comes to home studios. But guess what? Everybody is an expert in a home studio their own, and George and I have worked on literally
collectively thousands.
Yeah. So there's a way it has to be done, and every room is different, every voice is different, and people saying I've got this buzz or I got a hum, and they write to us like, well, it doesn't mean anything to us, we got to hear what it is, because generally if we hear something within 5 to 10 seconds, we know exactly what's going on for the most part.
All right, so jot this down, guys. I'll repeat it later, but if you want to get in contact with George, it's georgethe.tech. So that's literally the website. It's georgethe.tech. And for Dan, it's homevoiceoverstudio.com. Homevoiceoverstudio.com. Can you explain what the audio analysis is, Dan? Or I love how you have the specimen cup. That's hilarious. What is that? Because that's an affordable service that's very valuable, Dan.
Yeah, well, you know, and George and I both have this type of service, but I, you know, I put the specimen collection cup there as just, you know, a bit of a humorous thing. But it's a Dropbox, and I will listen to audio. What I want people to do is, the most important thing is I want to hear the raw audio of your room, because everybody's like, I got to process it. I have to process it to make me sound great. And the fact of the matter is the reason for your home voiceover studio is not to make you sound great. It is to make you sound like you. As you exist in the environment in which you're recording. And if you add compression and you add EQ and you do all these things that you don't particularly understand, or you're trying to make it sound like, you know, you're trying to please your ears, you've got to remember that you don't hire you. And what I do is I will listen to some raw audio with, you know, a few seconds of silence, you reading copy the way you normally would, another 10 seconds of silence. I want to see what your noise floor is like. I want to see how you're approaching the microphone. I want to hear the acoustics of the room. And I will give you a thorough analysis of what I think is either wrong with it or what's right with it. And, you know, if I think you really don't understand it or really need more help, then we can arrange a professional consultation where I will teach you the basics and then you can play with it and learn how it all works. But you'll be able to record competently in a very short period of time. And that's the most important thing, because George and I really just want people to be able to hit the record button and go. You know, George tends to work with a lot of people who are, you know, some of the big boys in the business, and they really need a lot of attention and they have a lot of high tech equipment and stuff. But they've also been doing it for years and years and years, and they know how to use it, or they at least trust George to make sure it sounds right. But that's what the specimen collection cup is for.
And George, may I ask, is it, would you mind just telling us what the approximate fee is for that audio analysis?
Oh, yeah, I think we're both charging $25 for that.
Yeah.
I
think that's ridiculously affordable, guys. $25.
Yeah. It's the best money spent. If you haven't done anything at all yet with Dan or I, it just starting there. If you don't know what to do, just start there, because you'll have a lot of information right out of the gate for a little bit of money, and that'll get you in the right direction. And if it sounds good, we'll tell you. And we always say, if it sounds good, it is good.
It is good. Yeah. And we're very, very thorough with what we say. I mean, we give it very detailed. We understand what it's supposed to sound like, which is an actual acronym, WHISTLE, what it's supposed to sound like. And it's valuable because of that. But you're trusting two ears that actually know what it's supposed to sound like, and how do you get it to sound the way it's supposed to sound like.
So, guys, Dan is also a professional voice actor. He has a background in radio and teaching. And, Dan, you're able to deliver heady information in a way that's digestible. That's got to have to do with your teaching experience. But can you explain what "if it sounds good, it is good" means? Because the temptation is to go out and buy expensive gear.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. The fact of the matter is it's not the equipment that gets you work. It's what goes on between your ears, down to your lungs, through your vocal cords, and out into the air to your microphone. It's not the microphone itself. Most studio condenser microphones over, you know, $150, $200 capture you as you exist. And there isn't a microphone out there that's going to make you read better or make you perform better. Some people say, well, it makes you feel more confident. Well, if you've got a really expensive microphone, you're going to hear ants marching in your backyard. It means the more expensive, the more sensitive the mic is, the more critical the acoustical environment in which your record is. So, you know, and the fact of the matter is the louder you talk, the more the acoustics of the room come into play. So it's important that you set the right acoustical environment to record in. And that probably is where you should spend the most money. What George and I love to joke about is how people go out and buy really expensive preamps, which may be more expensive than all the other gear they have. And it just makes everything in their room just sound like crap, including the voice actor themselves. So,
yeah, totally.
Yeah, there's a way.
Hey Dan, I think I think you cut out on that last part. If you don't mind repeating it, just about 5 seconds. I will move on to George for now. So, guys,
you're back, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
I'm back. Yeah. What was I saying? Oh, and guess who it was, George?
Did you get a phone call from one of our friends that interrupted our clubhouse?
Oh, who does it all the time? We used to have a rule on the show that if somebody called, you know, and you forgot to silence your phone, they have to get on the air. Like, okay, what do you want?
Yeah, you can't do that with clubhouse, though.
And guys, as Dan alluded to, George is known as the studio engineer to the stars. And regretfully, him and I did a session in my studio recently, which probably lowered that bar a little bit. My apologies, George.
Nice, George, self-deprecating humor.
How did you become this entity, the studio engineer to the stars? How'd you fall into this industry?
Well, it was just a little bit of luck. And we always, you know, we love cliches, but one of them is luck favors the prepared, right? So I just had a history of working with audio in any environment, in any situation, and just making it work. You know, I've known engineers who got very lucky and started out their careers in major recording studios with every tool known to man, and that's where they spent their lives. But for me, it was the exact opposite. It was just trying to get good audio from anything, whatever gear was available, whatever tech, whatever price. And then I got some experience doing, you know, gym, workout room sound, live bands, remote recording, and radio engineering, and all this other stuff. And all of that amalgamated into having a pretty decent basis for helping folks in this business. And I know for Dan, too, his varied background as well is what allowed us to have this skill set. But when I got introduced to Don LaFontaine, that pretty much cemented what I was going to be doing with my career, which was just work with voiceover. Because before that, I was doing a lot of other stuff. And that's when I realized I need to work with voice actors. They don't have advocates for their home studios. Don made it very clear to me that there was no advocate for what he needed to do from home, period. And that was just a calling. I was like, okay, now that's what I'm going to do. But because I happen to get to meet and work with Don and others of his ilk, I guess that's where that whole of the stars thing came from.
All right, guys, as promised, we're going to toss it to you right away here. So as I'm calling you up, please go ahead and mute your mic immediately and throw your phone on airplane mode while you're on stage. That way, if you get a call, we don't have to put that person on air. No self-promo, no self-promotion, no club promotion. Let's keep this tech focused. And do me a quick favor, follow George and Dan right here on Clubhouse. Also follow the VoiceOver Body Shop Club. So if you click on either of their profiles and scroll all the way down, it'll be the first club listed in the lower left-hand corner of the bottom of their profile.
Let me slip this in just for anybody tuning in late. I am recording this just to put in our archives. So I will post it later. And then so if there was something that was answered or you want to refer back to it, you'll be able to.
And where will they be able to check this out, George?
I'll just throw it up on George the Tech. Actually, because it's Dan and I, we'll probably put it on the VoiceOver Body Shop page, right, Dan?
Yeah,
we can. VOBS.TV.
There you go, guys. Your chance. This is that type of on the fly promotion. You can appear in an episode of VoiceOver Body Shop. So follow the guys right now and follow VoiceOver Pros, upper left hand corner. While I'm calling you up, mute immediately. And while I bring people up, George and Dan, I know it's kind of a funny thing that you always say, but Dan, what's the difference between a professional quality home studio and a broadcast quality home studio?
Nothing. That's the whole point. And that everybody uses this term broadcast quality. And it doesn't mean anything, because if you listen to TV, it's like, God, that audio sucks for the most part, you know, unless you like listening to a really good concert video or something along those lines. To us, we have come to the conclusion that broadcast quality means it doesn't sound bad. And there's an awful lot of stuff that can make it sound bad, but if you do it right up front, nobody's going to complain about it.
Yeah, and broadcast quality doesn't necessarily mean it sounds great. And I can also attest that there might be another category of audiobook quality, because I've heard a lot of really bad audiobook quality productions that go all the way to the Audible store. So, yeah, just because clients are buying your audio, just because, you know, rights holders are taking your audio, if you send the audio to me and I tell you it doesn't sound good, don't be shocked. That just happened the other day, you know, so we watch out for that term.
All right, let's crank it up a notch, guys. So pull to refresh everyone on stage. That'll expose the order. We're going to go Sonia first, Yolanda, then Torrin. So Sonia, how you doing? Welcome to the live Tech Talk Clubhouse style. What's your question for the guys?
Yay, thank you so much for inviting me up. I love you guys. You know I do. I think of you as the VO elves.
Because
you tinker with everything and you just know everything. So my question, I know that I actually emailed this to you guys this week, but you're on vacation for a week, or I guess. And so I'm going to ask you now instead. Dan is going to roll his eyes like he always does. But I'm wondering about the Vanguard V4 mic that I got. I'm having issues with the output quality. It's very low. And I didn't know before I bought the mic that this was something that you had to, you know, crank up in your interface.
Is the right pad switch on the back turned on? Is the little switch on -10?
I'm going to feel so stupid if it's like something really dumb like that.
Well, I mean, you know, it just means we get to more questions faster.
wait, so it's supposed to be
in the middle or on the low sloping, the low cut side? I like to put it on low cut.
It was in the middle.
Okay. All right. That's just the first thing to check. If a mic has strangely low output and it's a condenser mic like this one, so the mic you're comparing it to is what were you using before?
I had I'm not going to be able to remember. I can't remember.
It was was it like you had to turn the gain on your Scarlett 2i2 from 1 to 5? Like, was it that dramatic?
I used to have it like at 1 o'clock.
Oh, well, you got to crank it up.
Or 2 o'clock. But now I have to turn it all the way up to, I have a Presonus Studio 4, and I have to turn it all the way up almost the entire way.
Then I would contact the guy from Vanguard. What's his name, Dan? I can't remember.
Oh, so this is not something that is normal?
I don't think so.
Sound like, No, those are great microphones.
I know. I've heard. That's why I got it, because you guys recommended it.
Yeah.
Are you talking into the logo?
Yes, I am.
Got to check off all the boxes.
That's it.
You know?
That's troubleshooting.
I have learned from hearing you guys, school people. So, yes. Yes.
Is the V4 a multi-pattern mic?
Yeah, it is, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And which pattern switch is it on? Is it on the circle, the heart, or the eight?
I've tried them all.
And they're all weak, huh?
I have it on the heart right now.
Yeah, the cardioid.
My voice sounded really weird on some of the other ones. I was like, wait, that sounds like a man.
Mm.
Okay, well, that's beyond. That has nothing to do with the microphone. If it's like, well, I sound like a man. There is no microphone out there that's going to change who you are. And I don't quite get this. George may disagree with me a little bit on it, but microphones do not change the quality of your voice unless you're, you know, using a blue snowball or something like that, or as I'd like to say, a Radio Shack Electret condenser mic that you used to use with your cassette recorder. These mics will pick you up as you exist. Everybody hears things differently. And, you know, I think the best thing that we can do is actually look at what your audio is doing. Look at the waveform. Are you seeing like low wave, you know, really low the waveform?
They're very small.
Yeah. Fortunately, we do have a great relationship with this guy whose name we can't remember.
It's a small company, right? Like when you deal with them.
I can just email them, I guess.
Yeah, it's Derek.
Call him up.
If you email Derek at Vanguard Audio Labs, reach out to him. He's very hands-on. You know, it's like the guy from Twisted Wave, you know, when you're dealing with you're dealing directly with either the owner or the developer or somebody at the very top, not just some, you know, guy at a desk processing email. So that's what's great about dealing with some of these smaller boutique mic companies, you know. There's a lot of real hands-on support.
Yeah, okay. and they're very local here in Los Angeles. I think they're in Riverside.
They're in the area. I don't remember exactly, but they're around. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're always good for a t-shirt. So.
Oh, cool. Oh, anyway, one more question. Yeah. George, did you get the spray that I sent after Christmas?
Oh, the booth spray? The booth spray. Oh, my gosh. I think I did. Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much. I had to think back. Welcome. What did I get at Christmas? That was a really long time ago.
It was a late Christmas gift, yeah.
Thank you.
We got to hear what the booth spray is. Sonia, what is the booth spray, Sonia?
It's some aromatherapy sprays I make for voice people. I don't want to promote, so that's why I'm not saying much.
Okay.
Well played. Thanks, Sonia. You rock.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Hey, Yolanda. How you doing?
Hi. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Yolanda Porter. I'm an actor and a voiceover artist. And what I was going to ask is, like, I just recently upgraded from a Focusrite Scarlett to a Apollo Tween.
Why would you do that? Do you think that's going to change the way you perform copy?
No, not because it's going to help me perform better. I just thought it would be better quality of sound, which I haven't gotten to that part because
you can't figure out how to use it.
I can't make it work.
Exactly. There is the problem.
Yes, exactly. It's like I work with Adobe Audition, and I just could not make it work with it. I work with an Audio Technica mic.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't make it work, and
let me just say this, Yolanda. The Apollo is amazing, but it's kind of like going from your first skateboard to, you know, a racing car.
Yeah.
Where unless you are taught how to operate the thing and it's tuned for you, it's basically pointless. So when you buy this piece of equipment, you have to be prepared to invest even more in learning how to use it, learning how to set it up. I mean, that's what I do. I set these up for hundreds of people. But, you know, a lot of people, once they're all set up, they just know how to barely functionally make it work. And then they get confused about even how to monitor things. It's the only people that should be using the Apollo are people who are doing like extremely hot, rapid turnaround live to air or like promo trailer or even like affiliate stuff where they have to send the audio out absolutely ready for air.
Right.
So they have to basically have a radio broadcast signal chain, you know, like where their mic is going through a bunch of processing. Everybody else can record through a Scarlett Solo into Adobe Audition and have fantastic quality. There's really, honestly, we did a shootout, actually. If you go on YouTube and type in VOBS, was it a USB interface shootout? I think is what we called it.
Yeah.
You'll get to hear the Apollo in context with your interface and a ton of others. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get to find out how incredibly little the difference is. It's almost indistinguishable in quality. So what you're buying is just a far more complex machine with far more things that can go wrong, a much bigger learning curve.
Yeah,
and that's the problem with it. I mean, I'm a fan of the technology. I'm a tech guy. I've got one on my desk. I'm touching one. But it doesn't mean I'm going to say every actor should just buy this because it's the next logical upgrade. It isn't. It's not a logical upgrade for everyone. So all of that being said, again, if you're like, well, I'm not going to let this thing beat me. I really want to use it. And I feel like now that I own it, I want to keep it. Then, you know, reach out to me. At georgethe.tech, and I'll tech it out. It takes about an hour to get it set up and dialed in correctly.
Yeah, the problem is that because a lot of these companies hype this type of stuff, and then other people on Facebook say, "Oh yes, this is what I use."
The hype machine.
It's like, okay, but you have to understand that all of the technology that we use to record voiceover was never designed for making voiceover retracts. You know, they're not sitting in boardrooms going, you know, we don't have a good voiceover mic. You know, we don't have a good voiceover interface. It's all made for making music or for, for filmmaking and stuff like that. Voiceover is like, we're the red-haired bastard child of all these people. What we're doing is we're adapting this stuff to our purposes.
And yeah.
George is saying, the Apollo Twin, well, it's absolutely amazing what it can do. If you don't know what all those amazing things are, when to use them, how to use them, and about 10, 15, 20 years of experience of being able to manipulate your sound in that way, it really is about $500 more that you don't need to spend and that you can spend on coaching or on a better acoustical environment in which to record.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're ranting
the hard way.
I know you were ranting about it, Yolanda, but it's just something that has come up so often. And
every day.
We have a face. It's such a hot topic that I made a Facebook group called Universal Audio Apollo for VO, just for voiceover people. And it has over 1,000 people in it because there's so many people using them. I mean, that's proof positive. It's popular. But it's still, for all the reasons we said. So anyway, I think we beat that to death.
Yeah.
Yes. No, great. Well, but that's the conclusion I came to when after listening and to you guys, and then that you said that you do the analysis, the tech analysis, and all that. So I was like, I'm just going to introduce myself.
Nice to meet you.
Tell them about this.
We don't mean to discourage you. I mean, honestly, some people they want to learn the tech. They love I don't know. I shouldn't assume. Some people love learning new tech and want to learn it. And that's, I'm not stopping you for that. But if it's frustrating from day one, it may not be the best choice.
Right. Let George work with it and then take some duct tape and put it over the top of it and don't touch it again.
No, I really, I love learning about these things, like pretty much everything I know from voiceover and like technology wise. I'm not an expert. I don't know much about it. But what I know is just me being stubborn and trying to figure it out. So I do want to figure this out. So I will reach out to you and then you can tell me. And then after that, I will be like, I want to throw it in the trash can, or
sell it to a rock band.
where did you buy it too? What was store? Which retailer?
I bought it online. I think it's through their website, like their Universal directly? Audio.
Okay. Yeah. Like I do recommend buying them from Sweetwater, and I'm not one to, you know, necessarily plug any one retailer usually, but they're known for unbelievable after the sale support. And so when you buy something that complex, that prone to issues, then it's good to buy it from a really good reputable retailer that provides service. So if you buy from Universal Audio, which I didn't know they did that, but
yeah, I believe it's directly. I might be wrong, but I
yeah,
think it was
if
directly
if that's
them.
True, then you're dealing with them directly, which can be a mixed bag. Their support has been not had the greatest track record over the last year. So anyway, yeah. Reach out to me. Georgia.tech on there on my tech menu, support menu, there's a VOTech services menu, and at the bottom there's a Universal Audio setup thing. So
awesome. Yes, nice I will you. Do so. And thank you so much.
You're quite welcome, very much.
Thanks, Rolanda. So guys, keep your eyes out for Rolanda's Apollo Twin X on VO Gear Exchange in the coming weeks. All right, Torin, how you doing, buddy?
Doing pretty good, guys. Thank you for having me up here. George, I wanted to shout you out. Before I knew you were VO Royalty, you really helped me out with the Source Connect online, just with just YouTube videos. You're the first person that started making sense to me because I am just awful at computers.
Good. I'm glad I did that video a year ago.
Right. Thank you very much. And I was wondering if I could get an input because I'm moving in September and I have a couple different options for where I'm going to build my studio. And I was just wondering if I could give you like the room diameters and stuff like that just to get an idea.
Yeah, I mean, if you want us to evaluate your recording environment space here on Clubhouse, is that the idea?
My future space, like where I'm going to be moving. Just I have different options for what I can choose to do.
All right, well, tell us, maybe give us like two different options in your home that you're considering. We'll tell you which is, based on that information, the better one. Dan does this a lot too.
Yeah. Beautiful. All right, so I have an office that will be like 8 foot by 17 feet, very high ceilings.
Yep.
And then there's a bedroom that's 13 foot by 15 foot where I'd have like my bed and stuff. But
where are you, Texas?
Boston.
Jesus, those huge rooms,
right,
man.
Expensive.
Yeah. just got really lucky with the spot. It's just two people. And we got,
does it have four. A walk-in closet?
No walk-in closet. The office would probably be the smallest kind of room like that. And I do have a 5x5 like photo tent with a 6x6 or 6'6" ceiling.
Oh, interesting. Well,
that could be modified.
Yeah, you could blanket that sucker.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you looking for something permanent, like your forever studio, or you just want to get going as quickly as you can?
It is an apartment. Well, I've given myself until September, because that's when I'm going to move to like, kind of study everything, get myself situated with computers, and just understanding most everything to go on with VO before I kind of just dive into the studio to build it. So I have that, like, that timeline. But I was thinking the office, putting the tent in the office and just kind of hooking that up as, cause it is an apartment, as like a solution.
That sounds like a best option right now, you know, and that's one of the things is, you know, if you're like ready to get into voiceover and then you got to build this big expensive studio. It's like our philosophy is you don't buy expensive stuff to get work. You work to get more expensive stuff. And so it's best to start off simple. And if it works, nobody needs to see how the sausage is made. So,
right.
You know, as long as it sounds good, George.
Yeah, it is good. We know that you can get really good sound with extremely little, you know, modest setups. A tent with sound blankets, moving blankets, et cetera, draped all over and around. That was the genesis of the tri-booth, which is a thing that my buddy Rick and I invented. It's really just a very, very nuanced, very easy to set up version of that. But if you've already got this essentially tent, you just need to put heavier material on it and sound blankets, moving blankets, et cetera. When you're looking at them and shopping for them, choose ones that are heavier. Yeah. So they'll usually have a pound per dozen rating. It might be like 60 pounds, 80 pounds, 90 pounds. Look for the heavier weights. And that's going to give you the best performance in terms of absorbing sound. But bigger rooms, the bigger rooms aren't bad inherently, but that means there's just way more places for the noise to come in from the outside when it's a really big room, right? So
right.
More windows, more sources of noise. So that would be the major downside to a big space, is you're just more likely to have noise interrupting you.
Sounds good. Yeah, it has like one window and two doors in the office.
Well, that's probably going to be fine.
Probably the
best.
When
you get that set up, let's listen to it and let's determine if it, you know, how it works and how we can improve it if you know, if it's not quite up to snuff. But it sounds like that's your best option right now.
And I will give a plug for a company's product too. I'm very close to pulling the trigger on myself, and it's called Indos. The company is Indo Windows, like the word window without the I, W. So Indo Windows. They have these custom window inserts that you can insert in any old house window or apartment window that doesn't cause any damage whatsoever. So if that's your one noise source, if it's mostly quiet other than that one old rattly window or whatever that window is, if it's not an improved window, it's not cheap. You might be $300 to $400 for one of these, but it would be a dramatic improvement over a standard window.
Most of the noise you're going to find in any place is going to be your air handling system, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Yeah.
And that's usually what causes the most noise. And you just got to remember, if that is the noisy part, you got to turn it off. So when the wife comes and says, why is it so cold in here? Or why is it so warm in
I'm
here?
I'm making money. That's
and
why.
And saving money at the same time.
Making money and saving money at the same time. Exactly.
Thanks, Torin. We appreciate it, bud.
Of course. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
So, guys, if you want to check out the Tri-Booth that George co-designed, it's tribooth.com, T-R-I-booth.com. And make sure you're following George and Dan right here on Clubhouse. Please also follow VoiceOver Body Shop Club. Click on their profile, scroll all the way down. It's the first club in the lower left-hand corner. And also, please follow VoiceOver Pros, upper left-hand corner. Hannah, how you doing? Always good speaking with you.
Hi, Danny. Thanks for having me. Hi, George. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
I feel like what Torin said, we're already semi-friends because, George, when 2020 happened, I watched all of your videos and you got me set up on Source Connect. So thank you very much. First.
Oh, good.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So my question, it's probably just a silly couple questions. So they're quick. It's more so just about, again, since I'm like most people new to the home studio setting. Originally I had, when I was doing auditions a few months ago, one casting company kept telling my agent they're really liking my reads, but I had a tinny, trebly kind of hollow sound when they edited. I didn't do anything different to my settings. I literally just threw so many more like mattress pads and blankets and things in, and they said that fixed it. So that part is great. But my question is just with my setup, super simple. I have the Sennheiser 416 shotgun mic, and just with it's about placement. And I know when I recorded in studios, it would always be kind of above facing down. I've tried to Google it. Just do you have any thoughts on mic placement? I know how far I should be from the mic, but if it's a preference of like it's below me slightly or above me just from setup, if that matters. And then part two is pop filter. I don't know if I'm just in my head, but I can't always tell if the pop filter helps or hurts my sound. And then lastly, just the audio interface, like volume level for like regular reads, like general rule of thumb. Like just how high I should keep that up, not for like, you know, video game auditions, but for like a regular speaking voice.
You want to tag team this one, Dan?
Yeah. Okay. You want to?
Sorry if that's too much, by the way.
I'll start with the mic. So okay. the mic placement thing is about practicality of having to read copy. So you really want to have your copy exactly where you can read it comfortably without having to bend over, tilt your head, twist your neck. Looking straight down, looking up, you want to look straight ahead so your voice is open and your copy is unobstructed. Then think about where you're going to put your mic. So if it works better standing below and to the side, that might be okay. If it works better for you above and hanging down, then that's okay. It really matters where the capsule is and where it's looking. I find from down pointing up, kind of like a crooner, you know, you think of on live on a live stage, maybe isn't the best choice most of the time. It's a lot easier to get plosives, and it's listening to your nose breathing, you know, because it's pointing up your nose. So I find that to be less preferable. So I usually, that's why we usually go with the from top down thing. Another plug for something in my world, if you go to George the Tech's Instagram, in the IGTV category, I have a video about mic placement that might also be a helpful guide. Now, what was the next one, the question? Next, what was part two for Dan?
She was talking about pop filters, which goes to the question of how you're using it and what you're using it for. The 416 is very, very popular, especially with a lot of big studios. and with Georgian, I win because it's a narrow pickup pattern, and it prevents, you know, side. It has a lot of good side rejection, but it's used in a couple of different ways. Remember, it was originally designed as a video mic or as a filmmaking mic that somebody is on a at the end of a long pole following someone around, but out of the actual camera shot, so it's actually picking them up from a good, you know, 5 to 6 feet away, or maybe a little bit closer. So it picks up people as they exist, which is why it's great. In a smaller booth, we always recommend, having the capsule at about eye height, aiming down at about a 45 degree angle, and anywhere from seven inches to a foot away. And if, you know, for just regular commercial type reads, if you're doing promo, the reason people like a 416 is because if you talk into it end on, it just really carries that promo type of voice, which is still a very narrow niche that not a lot of people are doing a lot of heavy duty work in, but that's where you would need a pop screen. But not necessarily the windscreen that comes with it, because it's not windy in your booth, and that's what that's designed for, to keep the wind from creating noise. Does it work as a pop screen? Sort of. But George and I love this thing that's made by Hook Studios, that's made specifically for a 416. It's a three-layer pop screen with a mesh metal that just fits over the end of the mic, and that allows you to really do it end-on for promo work. That's a really nice way to use that. But for actual just regular commercial voiceover reads, or even audiobooks, because I've used them for audiobooks, the 45-degree angle and not too close to it works great. And then the last part, I guess, was about setting levels, which nobody understands that part.
I'm literally reading a comment on a YouTube video right now where there's a whole long thing about minus 18 dB peak, or we went levels that hover around minus 18, you know, for video games. There's so much confusion around levels because there's no standards, really. It seems that there's different requests for what those levels mean. The audiobook industry confuses people by saying you should send audio between a certain RMS level, which people don't often know how to measure, on and on and on. But essentially, if your waveform is barely visible, or if it looks like the top of it had a major haircut, the levels are wrong. It really, you know, if you're seeing the yellow, let it mellow. You're good. If it's into the red, you're close to dead. How's that? I just made that up on the spot. Is that close, Dan?
That's good. Yeah. I mean, what I usually tell people is, you know, and from my radio experience and having an analog VU meter in front of me, all of the programs that we use, all the DAWs, the digital audio workstations we use, or software platforms, have a meter. You know, Audacity has it, Audition has it, Twisted Wave has it, SoundForge has it. And essentially the scale is the same. Always in the green, always in the yellow, with an occasional flash of red, and like a nanosecond. But if you're in the yellow and not hitting the red, you're golden, which is, you know, I guess.
Apropos,
yeah, because it's yellow.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. That was super helpful.
You're welcome.
Quite welcome.
Thanks, Anna. All right, from the Dominican Republic, Naomi, how you doing?
Hola.
Hola. You guys, I'm having a shelf installed in my little closet booth right now. So some people just walked in. So hi. Yeah, I have had a great setup for over 10 years in Seattle, Washington, and I just relocated my family to the Dominican Republic. So I'm kind of starting over in many ways. And it's going to be fine. It just takes a minute. So my space, my little booth space, I think I have sounding decent. But the room that it's in, here's my specific question. How do you feel about wood diffuser panels? Those ones where it's like different levels of wood so that it bounces in all kinds of different directions. The reason why I ask is if I use, you know, foam or, you know, like acoustic panels and it's fabric. Oh, you guys, the mosquitoes love them. And it's a problem in this world. So what do you think about them? They sure are beautiful. You know, I could scroll for hours on Pinterest with all the ideas, but yeah, is there a difference in final sound in the room?
Definitely.
Thanks.
They're for different things, as we'll explain. I mean, the wood ones are really for heavy duty sound to diffuse that. Like if you're in a concert hall, and you look up at the walls, you usually see a lot of stuff like that. Wood ones are essentially for diffusion. They take the sound and bounce it in a bunch of different directions so it doesn't bounce directly back.
It doesn't reduce the reverb, though.
Right.
The echo, then, is what it...
Yeah.
Right. So foam is better, or,
What are fabrics down there people use in their homes that... Does every piece of fabric attract mosquitoes in the Dominican?
I've noticed like people use, like jute and reed and...
Well, jute is perfect. Most of the best acoustical panels are wrapped in jute. It looks like burlap.
Yeah. Or canvas or something along
those lines. Jute is perfect.
Oh, yeah. I'm having like this major awakening. Yeah, and I'm picturing jute. All kinds of cool stuff now. Thank you so much. I never even thought of that. I just was trying to get some jute rugs, but I never... Okay, cool. Yeah. And also, thank you so much for everything you said about microphones. I've had the same microphone since 2002. It's a Neumann TLM-103, and then every 10 or like 7 years, I'm like, oh, I should upgrade this. And then I research, and then I'm like, but it's not broken.
Right.
And so why am I doing this again? And every time I chicken out, so you just help me validate my...
Do you have is it going to be in a humidity controlled space where your mic is?
No.
Okay, it's going to be a challenge. Mics like that don't like humidity. So if you end up having a really odd noises in your recording that sound like a motorboat idling or static, if the capsule gets too moist from humidity, it can get funky. So.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
really?
So one microphone.
I feel like
that,
I might have already heard that.
Yeah, one microphone that is impervious to that, which will get another vote tonight for being so.
Is that long skinny one?
The 416 is in what they call an RF design. I don't know all the technical explanation of what the RF design really means, but I do know that technology allows it to be impervious to moisture. So they're really good in bad environments. That's 416s have been, used on film sets for 25, 30 years.
Right.
In the rainforests and all over the hell, and they work. So if you do start hearing a lot of funkiness in the audio or just at random or whatever, that might be what's getting you in trouble. So the TLM-103, I haven't talked to a lot of people in the Dominican Republic yet with those kinds of mics, but I'd be curious to see how it goes.
I'll report back.
Yep, please do.
Yeah, we want to hear what it sounds like.
You can always send an email to the guys at vobs.tv. That's a great way to reach out to Dan and I for the show, and we can talk about this stuff. So if you have things that go weird, send an email to theguys@vobs.tv.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much, you guys.
Good luck.
Great. Thank you.
Adios. Enjoy the Dominican Republic. It's really nice there.
Thanks, Naomi. Hey, guys, really, real quick, what is jute wood? J-U-T-E, is that right?
It's,
it's
like...
kind of fabric, right?
Yeah, it's twine, like heavy twine that's woven into a rug that you see in outdoor rugs.
It looks like burlap.
Yeah, it is burlap.
Yeah, it's. Burlap, I think it is burlap. Yeah, it literally is burlap. Like, if you type in burlap online, you'll see burlap and then jute in the same... description. So it's what you see coffee bags made out of.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah,
a lot of people like to use coffee bags to cover their foam or their acoustical panels.
Yeah, and you might be able to find coffee bags down there.
Yeah.
So they have coffee bean.
Yeah, and I think they're used for coffee bean bags because they won't trap the moisture. The last thing you want is your coffee beans to get moldy, right? So the jute is fantastic. It's breathable. That's why it's so good on acoustical panels. The sound passes through it pretty much unchanged. So that's when you're looking for fabric, you want fabric that's a very porous, open weave. And Jute is just that. So bingo. There you go.
Right on. Hey, Dan Alpern, how you doing? What's your question for the guys?
Hey, guys. Just first off, thanks, longtime fans, and appreciate you guys giving some time here. I'm currently using a Rodecaster Pro with an SM58, and I'm going into audition. I do a lot of podcast and YouTube work, and it's great for that.
Yep.
And I work with a 416 at work. I do some field recording and then some more professional recording in a studio space. And I'm thinking about getting one for my home setup. And my question is the Rodecaster Pro, is that good enough to work with a mic like the 416? And I should mention that I have a cloud lifter on.
Sure.
Well, why does it have a cloud lifter?
Well, the cloud lifter is for the dynamic mic.
Oh, for the SM58. Yeah.
No, it's fantastic. Dan, have you tried your 416 with your Rodecaster?
I have not yet because it's work and I haven't brought it home.
Okay. No, I use that in my
studio. Other Dan. Sorry. Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute, there's two Dans.
It's a great name.
Dan Leonard, would have you tried it?
Yeah, that's what I use. Once I bought the Rodecaster, I really like it for doing a lot of different things. It's designed for podcasting and it's fantastic for that. But because it's got, it's got a really good preamp in it. These Class A servo based preamps that Rode has put in there that we really like. And it's very versatile. It's essentially a radio station in a much smaller board that gives you the ability to do all sorts of stuff. And it just sounds really, really good. And I'm really happy with it.
It kind of has the pros of the Apollo without the cons.
Right.
So exactly. It doesn't let you emulate every preamp and channel strip in history, but it does very well, and it's very easy to operate, and it has sort of a basic mode which can't get you in too much trouble, and an advanced mode where you can really tweak everything. So I wish they would make a VO edition or like a light version, not so physically huge.
Right.
It is a great board. I'm using it right now with a Rode NTG5 shotgun mic, which I find to be an extremely good stand-in for a 416 if you're on a budget. I think you can't go too wrong with it. Just don't be careful not to overprocess, and make sure you know if you're processing, because sometimes it's easy to have that on and not even know it.
Right.
And that's one of its only real downsides. It's very easy to be processing or limiting or compressing without knowing it.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I was in a voice class recording a new demo, and I had been doing a podcast earlier. I had accidentally left the processing on, and I got about two or three reads in before I started hearing it myself and had to remind myself to go back in. And I like they added the one button to just turn off all the processing at once.
Oh, yeah. Another hack you can do is you could say, since it's got four mic inputs, you're not using them, make like input four or something your dedicated voiceover input.
Yeah.
And that way, when you plug your mic into that channel, you know for sure it's a completely dead, dry, flat, nothing on it.
Right. So. The philosophy really is that, there should not be any front-end processing when you're doing voiceover, because all the software we use has everything you need and allows you to adjust it in post. And if you don't like it, you can adjust it.
Yeah, you can undo it.
Yeah. Once it's there on the front end, it's there forever.
Yeah.
I like it because, I don't really have anything set on it. But for doing podcasting and having fun and stuff like that, it's great for having, the Rodecaster Pro. But for front end processing, maybe a little bit of compression. The master compressor on it, I find, is really, really good. And that's saying a lot, because I really don't like using a lot of front end compression, but I like the one that the master compressor on the Pro.
Yep.
Great. And then I'll just make one comment. You guys were talking earlier about Bluetooth. I found that I'd much rather merge calls on my phone and use the TRRS input that it has. And then I'll just use the Bluetooth. I want to bring music into the podcast, but I don't use Bluetooth for voice for the same reason.
I was disappointed how the Bluetooth sounded the way it does. And that's exactly what I I do. I never use the Bluetooth because I'm really not doing any shows that way. But that would be the good use of Bluetooth would be for that purpose. So you got the right idea, I think. Thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan. Hey, Don, how you doing? Don, if you can unmute.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. How you doing?
You're up, Don. You're on.
If I could learn how to unmute a mic on a phone, that would be great. Yeah. Thanks for bringing me up, Danny. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Nice to meet you on Clubhouse. So I have a couple of questions. Is that okay?
Should we have? Sure. What do you want to do, Danny? We got six more people in the queue. Do you want to try to get to more people, or what do you want to do?
Okay. I could just start with one, and if it goes too long, then
okay,
just say
we'll tell you. Yeah.
Okay. You just get the hook and pull me off. Okay. So, I wanted to talk about the most user friendly DAW. I mean, I've been doing auditions and everything on GarageBand for a long time, and I'm very comfortable with it. I'm just not sure that the quality recording for to do professional
I love
projects.
When someone starts by saying I'm using GarageBand. You know why? Because
why?
I know they're on a Mac. That's how that's why I look. Because then we can answer it so easily, right, Dan?
Yeah, we just use Twisted Wave. It's
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's super duper simple. We hear people say, I don't get Twisted Wave. Well, that's because you're used to using Pro Tools or something like that, and it's not sophisticated enough. And the fact that this is, we want you to keep it super duper simple, and Twisted Wave is super duper simple. It's like, you know, people get so obsessed with, it's got to have all this stuff and this and that, because everybody says I got to have this, that, and the other thing. When in reality, all you're really doing is using a cassette recorder, and it's play, record, rewind, and that's all it is. And you're just getting a graphic representation of what the sound is. And if you're setup is right up front, as we were saying earlier on, that if your acoustics are right, you use your mic right, you set your levels right, what else is there? Plus, Twisted Wave has any back end processing, any post stuff that you could possibly need to get your track sounding right. Now, the fact of the matter is GarageBand, it goes back to that point that I was saying earlier about all this stuff was designed for making music, and GarageBand really doesn't sound any different from anything else, but its workflow, and I George and I will talk about this, when it comes to software, it's the workflow that makes the most difference in all of these platforms, not how they actually sound, because they all sound exactly the same. Ones and zeros are ones and zeros. And GarageBand has a distinct workflow for what it's named for, which is being in a garage band and recording multi-tracks and mixing them all together. When you're doing voiceover, one track mono, you don't need a multi-track recorder to do that. And Twisted Wave is super duper simple for doing that.
Okay, because I tried learning Cubase and I was just,
no.
There's just so much. It's just hard on the eyes, you know, looking at it.
Yeah.
So much going on. So I've been learning Audacity. And other people suggest, you know, Adobe Audition, and
none of those are bad choices. But but if all this is overwhelming, Twisted Wave is the way to go. And just because it's simple doesn't mean doesn't mean it's not professional. I think don't confuse the two. It's totally professional tool.
Yeah.
It's just designed for a very simple use case, which is recording a mono track and editing it.
Does it have, can you record multiple tracks, or is it just a one track at a time for projects?
Well, you can't record multiple tracks on it.
You can record multiple channels. I don't know why you would, but you can record like four mics at once. But
no, it's just like, while I'm recording something, I'll put it on a track and then I'll just mute that track and open another track. I'll keep two tracks going. You can't do that with
Twisted Wave. No, you just have a separate file open. You'll have like that file take over here, and then might have another window in front of it with another file.
Yeah. Here's a good tip if you know, for recording voiceover tracks. And a lot of people have like, "Oh, I didn't like that," and they'll hit stop. Don't do that. When you're recording a script, you hit record, you go to the microphone, and you record it until you're happy. And
let it roll.
and
just keep it going on the same track.
Right, exactly. And then edit out what you don't like. And because you might say something in one sentence that you really like, that if you edit, if you know how to edit really tight, you can throw that in and then really save another take with that, you know, which is you know, one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of what they call punch and roll, even though it's roll and punch. You know, for audiobooks, it saves time. It's a great tool for doing audiobooks. But when I, you know, when I was doing audiobooks, I'm like, I want to be able to go through there and I want to make sure that I don't lose anything.
Yeah.
Because once you erase something, it's gone. So if you, with Twisted Wave, it's great because you can record incredibly long files on Twisted Wave because it's such a simple program. It doesn't take up a lot of bandwidth on your processing. So you can, you know, hit record and just keep going. You make a mistake, you go, or boop, or you use your audio, your East West Audio Body Shop clicker, of which there are maybe two left. Yeah. Oh, George has his hand. I know mine's here somewhere. I think it's actually.
Okay. And, what is that?
It's a dog clicker.
Dog training clicker.
Oh, I'm going to use that on myself. Is that what you mean? What is that? What do you use it for? Or you put you use the clicker? Oh, like a clap, like a clapper,
like
with
a mark.
Film.
Right. Yeah, it's like a mark. Okay. Here's our mark. Okay. Here's our mark. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's a great tip.
Yeah, and when you roll through Twisted Wave, you can. I mean, you'll see exactly where you made a mistake, and you can like pick it up in the middle of a sentence. And you know, as long as you're editing on a consonant, you can. It's totally seamless. But the other great thing about Twisted Wave is that you can scrub with it. And scrubbing is like, you know, if you're using a reel to reel and you're what we used to call rocking the reels, you can literally go along. And that's, you know, I mean, that's how I learned how to edit was with, you know, physical tape, a razor blade, and a grease pencil. So something like Twisted Wave is gives a great visual cue. Yeah, exactly. And that's really why it's, and it's only $79 once. As opposed to paying for it every month, like with Adobe, or paying a lot upfront. I was going to do that, but George got that stuff. You
know, sounds like scratching a record.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just because I can, I had to try.
That's fun.
Thanks a lot, Don.
Okay, thanks for having me, guys. Thanks so much. It was really helpful.
Thanks for coming.
So, George and Dan, we're at the top of the hour. How are you guys feeling? Do we have a couple quick moments for a speed round here?
Let me let me just double check. But I wanted to say that this is a prime opportunity to tell everybody that is waiting for a question to be answered that you should be coming on VOBS.TV and asking it on our show because we are doing Clubhouse during our show now. Thanks to Danny's help, we've been able to make that happen in a very seamless way. It's actually worked extremely well. So we've been able to relive. When we started VOBS, the whole idea was to be able to take questions live. And we did it for a little while, but it was hard to manage it for us. And now that we have a way to do that, 10 years in, thanks to Clubhouse, and then, of course, having Danny host the Clubhouse itself like he is right now, which he's so good at, we're able to get through tons of questions exactly like we are today, and we do it every other week when we tape the show live. When are we taping next, Dan? Is it April 5th? 4th?
I think it's the first Monday in April.
The first Monday in April, yeah. So
whatever
it is, yeah. The first Monday in April, April 5th, is our next live taping. So 5 p.m., tune in to VOBS.TV. You can and we'll have it on the Clubhouse simulcasted, and that's where you can answer live questions in the exact same way we are doing right now, and every 2 weeks.
Only you can see us rolling our eyes.
Yeah, and then you'll actually get to see the eye rolling. Oh, yes, we have a lot of fun.
We love you guys. Actually, I mean, it's just you got to realize that we get these questions every single day. And we're like, why haven't people haven't heard this? Because there's so many people trying to get into voiceover, and home studios have become so much more important, despite the fact that George and I have been begging people to do it for the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
It's a pandemic to really make it happen.
And, you know, we are trying to be humorous and make light of things. If you ever feel like we're laughing at you, we're not laughing at you. We're laughing because it's so familiar to us. And it's just something we've all, we deal with day in, day out. And we just know where you've been and where you got to go. So, anyway,
we don't mean to be condescending.
It's, never.
It really, because we're happy that you're doing this, and you know, we know that, you know, if you work with us, that if you're not succeeding in voiceover, it's not going to be our fault.
Right. We don't want technology to be the reason you don't book a gig.
Yeah.
Like, that's the lamest way to lose an audition. Losing audition because they didn't like your read or your voice. Okay. I mean, that's just, what are you going to do? But if you are the right voice, but your gear sounds like crap, or your room sounds bad, or it's noisy, et cetera, and that's how you lost a gig. That's I would think, as an actor, and I'm not one, but I would think that would be a really dumb, really bad way to miss a gig just for a technical reason.
Yeah.
And guys, do you have any reveal of a guest for Monday, April 5th on VOBS?
We have Greg.
Actually, no, isn't it? Aren't we going to have on? Kevin Gershon.
Kevin Gershon.
Kevin Gershon is a, I'll say a high power producer at CBS. I'll say that he is a television producer. So it's a different kind of guest for us, but I've known Kevin a really long time, and it was a prime opportunity to have him on, and he agreed. So it's a great opportunity to ask a television producer anything you've ever wanted to know about producing television.
Yeah. But he works with voice actors all the time.
All the time. That's why I know him, because he casted Randy Thomas for Entertainment Tonight voiceovers for years and years and years. That's how I know him.
All right, let's crank out a speed round. We're just going to dedicate a few brief moments to each question. So, Vernon, you're up, buddy.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for having me, Danny. I'll try to be quick. First of all, I just want to say, George, I was introduced to you through Kathleen Andrade here out of Chicago. So thank you so much for your help through Source Connect. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
My question, this is actually rooted from a previous time that I was in another club room with Danny and Brent. My Scarlett 2i2 has this crackling sound that pops in, and he sort of advised me, hey, there was a bad batch of Scarlets that went out, so I contact them, and they finally sent me a new one, but this one still has the same problem. Part of the problem, and it speaks to what you just said, I had a dream job audition last week for an animation Latinx series, and I had this issue where this crackling thing comes up. I shut off the Scarlett, and I turn it back on, and it seems to fix the problem, but then it just erratically and for whatever reason just happens again, and then it just sort of subdues itself. It sounds a little bit like white noise, then all of a sudden starts amping up, and there's a little bit of a crackle, and then the crackle goes down, and then the noise goes down, and then it just sounds beautiful. But I don't know what specifically to ask you, like if there's a setting. I'm using a Scarlett 2i2 with a Rode NT1 out of Audacity on a MacBook.
Shouldn't happen.
Yeah, that is
right.
Not on a Mac.
Right. Yeah.
That you know, I think George and I will probably agree that sounds like some incompatibility with the 2i2 with your particular system, but you should just plug it in and work. Normally, if you're getting crackling, we might think it's something like a dropout, like if you have a mechanical hard drive that can't keep up with the data stream, although that may have something to do with it. What do you think?
How old is George? The computer again?
I've got it last year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it's solid state. It doesn't have a hard drive. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm hearing Scarlett glitching issues come up in forums more and more often. Which is it, the Gen 3 Scarlett? Do you know which one it is?
I don't know what generation. I mean, I think it is because I just bought it.
It has an air button on the front?
It has a instrument and air button, which I don't use because the air just amplifies the noise that I'm hearing.
Yeah, contact Focusrite for sure. And rule that out. The thing about troubleshooting these things is unless you can swap out stuff to test, it's hard. So if you don't have another mic, you can't disprove it's the mic.
Yeah.
So you want to borrow
a mic. And I
replaced
the cable too. I got a Megami because I thought, well, that'll, you know.
You want to, so you have to disprove to Focusrite you have to disprove it's the mic to Focusrite, and you have to disprove to Rode it's the Focusrite.
Yeah.
You know something there, George? You know, the way he's describing it, the fact that you start hearing white noise and crackling, that sounds like a phantom power issue.
Hmm. Yeah, could be. I would start with the Focusrite. It's the more likely thing to have issues. And so start there and contact dev support first. That's where I would start.
Okay. I will say that I already got it replaced once, so this would be now the second time.
Yeah, I don't like hearing that at all.
Yeah.
Can I just have you guys listen to what I'm talking about? I have a very quick clip that I can play very quickly.
On your phone? Okay, if you could do that.
No, I'm just going to play it off the speakers off my MacBook, for my MacBook, because I have a clip that I recorded where the problem was, where I could hear it.
Go ahead, and if it's quick, we got five more people.
It'll be very quick.
Sounds like radio telemetry talking to a distant planet.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is, and that was like a minimal. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, fellas.
It could really be the mic. Yeah, reach out to both companies. Good luck.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Vernon. Hey, Nathan, how you doing, buddy?
Hey guys, thanks for having me up here. Just a quick question out of ignorance and just because I don't know. So you guys were talking earlier that a $300 mic, $250-$300 mic is pretty good. Why are agents and some companies so adamant for us to have a 103, a 416, or even an 87?
Elitism.
Because that's what they know. You got to remember, they forget that you're in your closet or you're in your living room or something like that. They're used to a professional environment. There's two reasons for this. And George and I, actually did a little bit of research on it. George had this great thread where he was chasing, where is this stuff coming from? And you sort of hit a brick wall. My theory is there's two reasons for this. One, you've got you've got engineers who have jobs and 401ks and health insurance, and they have very little interest in us succeeding at being able to do this at home. Are they doing it deliberately? Maybe a couple are. I've talked to a couple and we don't want people doing this, but they're throwing off this stuff to confuse you. That's only a helicopter going by. You can actually see the blades. That was pretty
long. That's pretty close.
But the other thing is that's what they know, and they do not. You're really talking about two different things. They're guys that work in studios. They have, these top people coming into their studio all the time. It's their environment, and that's what they're relating out to. To the creative directors who are talking to the casting directors, who are then talking to the advertising agencies. And by the time it gets to the advertising agencies and the agents are hearing, you got to have this, the agents don't have a freaking clue what these people are talking about. And then they toss that on to you and they're like, you need source canoodle or something along those lines. And, and then if you go on the Facebook forums and you see this stuff, you have some people out there that want to send you down a technological rabbit hole because that's the kind of people they are. It's sort of a subtle way of cyberbullying. What do you think, George?
It's elitism, but it's also familiarity. So that's what they are having. That's what they're going to. Any top studio charging $200 an hour is not going to have a Rode mic, period. They're just not. Yeah. It's expected they're going to have top of the line, industry standard, blah, 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 expensive German mics. And so that's why they just throw those out there. They really don't know any other mic, probably. And those mics are familiar to them. So in their life, in their world, they would love the voice actors to be using all the same mics they have. But will it make a difference to the end product? Probably not. It's just what they're familiar with.
They can't tell the difference anyway. I mean, they're not going to listen to you, you're on a U87. They're not going to be able to tell that, especially if you've recorded it properly.
No, unless they've recorded you in their studio on a U87, and then you went home the next day and recorded you in your studio on a U87, maybe then they could know, that sounds right. There's no way. And out of context at their own studio, there's no way they'll know. All right, next.
No, thanks.
Thanks, Nathan. All right, our San Francisco affiliate, Chris Rossetti. How you doing, Chris?
Very good. Thank you so much for this great information. Just want to make something clear before we go. Is it, if you're seeing yellow, let it mellow. If you're seeing red, you're close to dead. And jute is the root if you're foam alone?
Very good.
See, that's why I record this stuff, man. That's gold right there.
I was going to write that down, but yeah, thanks for...
All right, let me just end with rewinding my phone here. Thanks for the information. Have a great day.
You'll be here all week, guys. Chris Rossetti. All right, Dan, how you doing, buddy?
Wow. Chris, that was hilarious. Danny, thank you, first of all, so much for bringing me up. And I've learned a lot since the first time I opened my mouth here in Clubhouse. I love your rooms. I really appreciate it. And Chris, before you go, I think we actually know a mutual friend, Jolie Mason. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm going to be quick. George, Dan, I've been at this a while, and you guys were there from the start. I'm going to gush, just patting everybody on the back, because you guys are amazing. I've listened to you from YouTube. I mean, any actor that doesn't utilize YouTube for their questions first before, you know, asking straight from the horse's mouth, I think is just not utilizing the resources and the technology that we have at our fingertips. So thank you, everything you guys, especially this past year, George, your source, is it Source Canoodles, Dan? The videos really came in handy.
Source Canoodles, yeah.
Source Canoodles, yeah. So thank you, guys. My question is very specific. I've been in the closet. I've been recording in closets, and now I'm in a beautiful hand-me-down Scott's booth, and I do enjoy it, but given... that I do like to physicate and move my body, and I did just buy my first house. I'd like to use a specific space in the house and finally dedicate it to a studio build. And specifically, I know we have current conditions that are making things kind of difficult and awkward, but in terms of assistance with that, how is that looking for you, specifically Dan? And this has been Dan Foster, over and out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if we have – the best way is, you know, the pandemic has made it tough because George and I both like to do this. We like to go and sniff around and see what room that, you know, you can use that's going to fit within your lifestyle, because you're not the only person living there, right? And it's right. – so we have – there's a lot of factors you have to look at. An extra bedroom that's not too big usually works great if you've got nobody else sleeping in there, that sort of thing. You know, do you have a garage, you know, that, you know, unless it's taken up by cars, there might be some usable space there. There's lots of different suggestions that we could make, but it really comes down to your individual place. And that's why I keep saying every voice is different. Every room is different. And we really have to take a physical look at where your possibilities are and not guess. You know, it's like, well, this is a space where we could do this. This is a space where we could do that. So when you decide what is usable space for you, you know, we can visually take a look at it and say, okay, this is how you can do this. And then you set it up and you listen. And it's like, okay, maybe it just needs a slight minor adjustment here. You know, you shouldn't be under a shelf. You shouldn't have a hard desk. You know, there's certain things that you need to do. But once it's set up, then it's not hard to fine tune it. Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir, it does. Yes, and I have specific locations in mind already. The room in question, the second bedroom, whether it's a closet or if it is the garage, those are all options. I just know, like you said, given the pandemic, and that's more one-on-one, I guess, is the best. Is it your email from your website to start there?
Yeah, absolutely.
For contact.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we do. I mean, George and I are both professional consultants, and we design these studios, you know, and we try to find what's best for your specific situation. So.
Speaking of which, Dan, it's plug time. I'm available at georgethe.tech for my tech support stuff. And Dan, you're over at?
homevoiceoverstudio.com.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dan Foster. And Antonio, you're going to close out Tech Talk Clubhouse style. What's your question, Antonio?
Speaking of plugging, I'm about to most likely spend half of my year in Australia, which is going to obviously give me some problems in terms of the quality of what I'm recording at home now versus what I'll be recording quote unquote on the road.
Wait, is it backwards there or something? Does it go, the audio go together?
Just in terms of the time frames of when things are going to be due. And but I've been looking at the tri booth as an option to take with me if I'm there for an extended period of time. But, you know, I've got a limited budget, and so I want to make sure that I'm using my funds correctly. Right now, as it stands, you know, I've heard George say in other places, you know, make sure you have duplicates of what you've got so that if something dies on you, you can continue to work. Other than the tri-booth, I've got a Scarlett 2i2 and I've got a Rode NTG4 Plus. And I'd like to actually purchase other equipment. I've got my eye on a condenser. What are your thoughts in terms of, you know, being mobile for that extent of time where it's not, oh, I've got to fire something off in a hotel room, but I need to set up someplace, but I don't have the money to buy, you know, or build out a room.
Oof. Well, I mean, the Tribooth is a really nice product. It's not cheap. And so you do have to really, I mean, it's so hard for us to answer that question because we don't have a spreadsheet with your budget on it.
No. What I'm saying is the booth is a foregone conclusion. I'm already going to purchase the booth, but in addition,
That's a no brainer. Just use the tri booth because that's going to give you the consistent sound, and you can take it between Australia and where you are now.
But for gear, I mean, if you're looking for redundancy, well, then you do exactly what that means. You buy the same gear.
Or bring it with you.
Yeah, if the budget isn't there to buy exactly the same gear, are you looking for a more affordable stunt stand-ins for what you already have?
No, the truth is that the Rode NTG4 was already kind of the what I could afford. You know, I got the same advice everybody else did. You know, they told me to get the Sennheiser, they told me to get the Neumann, and I bought what I could afford at the time because it was a utility mic, and that was the best that I could do. But now that there's a little money to play with, again, this, you know, I could spend a little money on a Neumann now and have a condenser mic in the, you know, in the mix. But, you know, given that, are there other alternatives that, you know, could save me a buck but still give me what I need?
Well, you're already getting what you need.
Yeah. Are you booking work?
I mean, you already have what you need. So, I mean, if you want something more expensive, it's just because you want to buy something more expensive. And then, so the Rode NTG5 is like the NTG4, but with the best possible componentry. And then it's going up to me. There's nothing between that and there's nothing between the NTG5 and the 416. It's just, if you want the real thing, then get the real thing. Because if you want to say, I have a 416 and you're working on jobs that typically are using a 416, then get a 416, like get the real thing. Get it. The best deal of going is usually bswusa.com. Joe Cipriano worked a deal with them a long time ago. If you use his name when you buy it, you know, get a quote and mention his name, they usually knock like $200 off. Joe sent me, or Santa Joe or something like that. They'll give you a killer deal on one.
That's fantastic. Yeah, because I mean, I don't need the name recognition. I want to make sure that I'm set up as best as possible to kind of give me the right quality, but at the same time, you know, I want money to spend on other toys too.
Yeah. I would get a Rode NGG5 and a Micport Pro 2. That to me is the killer ultimate take with you rig that is lightweight, compact, and has zero quality compromise. I mean, absolutely top quality. You're talking $800 roughly for both, and super high quality.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time, gentlemen. I really appreciate your answers.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Antonio. And everyone, thanks for joining us on this live Tech Talk Clubhouse edition performance. If you can get in touch with George at georgethe.tech and Dan at homevoiceoverstudio.com. If you want to contact them together, it's theguys@vobs.tv. Please follow George and Dan right here on Clubhouse. Follow VoiceOver Body Shop Club by clicking on their profile, and please follow VoiceOver Pros. Join us Monday, April 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific for a live simulcast of VOBS. George, Dan, you guys rock.
Thank you, Danny. It was a lot of fun. And it always amazes me how much we actually know. It's all buried in there.
I have to regurgitate it once in a while to remember that I know it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, I'll forget.
Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen, and have a great day, everyone. We'll see you Monday, April 5th.
Have a good weekend, everybody.